Engineers, we're supposed to be getting back some land from the feds if they are going to flood in the 70s to make the Neil Smith Reservoir. And ever since they decided not to do that, their intent has been to give it back to Story County. We've been in like 4 or 5 years, thank you. We've been in a formal process. But yeah, my conscience just used to pull that hair.
I mean, at one point, yeah.
Tore it all out over there. Okay, Jerry, who's chairing this meeting?
I'm sorry, ma'am.
You are.
This is our chairman.
It's a joint
planning meeting.
It's a joint meeting.
Who's hosting it? I don't have an agenda for it, so. You have an agenda, so it must be you.
Would you like me to just do that? I just don't want to step on anybody's toes. Okay, well, I'll call to order the combined meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors on Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. So, a roll call.
Do you want me to do that?
Why don't you do that? For the Planning and Zoning, and I'll do it for the Supervisors.
Okay. Smith.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
McBride.
Here.
Moore.
Here.
Sherwood.
Here.
Moss.
Here.
For the supervisors, Olson, Heddens,
here,
Merkin, here. Okay. The next thing we have is recognition of service for Commissioner Cable. Yay. Jerry Cable made his full 5-year term.
I made it 5.
Wow. 5. I couldn't do that.
You didn't make it.
I didn't make it.
Yeah.
But I did serve 3 years with you.
Three years.
I'm skipping track. 3 years with you, and that was really a pleasure. In fact, I've served with just about everybody, not you, Doug, but everybody else, I think. I'm not you, Cheryl. But I interviewed you.
Yes, you did.
Okay. So I just want to say that those were some very interesting years. enjoyed it a lot, and I really enjoyed the perspective that Jerry brought to Planning and Zoning Commission. I think the thing I always liked about the commission was there were really diverse kind of people, diverse opinions on things. We had great discussion, and Jerry was right in the middle of all of that. And I don't know what your attendance record was, but I imagine it was pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think I might have missed a few. One or two.
Wow. One or two in 5 years. See, that's the kind of volunteerism that really helps the county. And since I've been a supervisor, and I know Loris and Lisa can also, you know, attest to this, we interview a lot of people from boards and commissions, and you get a real sense of how much of the county's, I mean, we have really dedicated good employees, some of whom are in this room, but also we have a volunteer workforce for the county that brings in perspectives, you know, of so many different aspects of the county. So I appreciate the service that our volunteers do, and I'm just going to hand this to you. This is for commemoration of your service in the Planning and Zoning Commission, and you're going to have to reach over and shake my hand.
I want to say it's been a great experience for me. I enjoyed it. Great work with Jerry and his staff. Even though we may not always agree, we could work together. I've met a lot of great people in certain other commission. I just wish that we could get more people involved.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to miss it.
Okay, I would like the two of you to stand up, face me, and hold that so I can meet you.
What do you want?
Just stand up where you are, just like you passed it over to him.
Oh, okay.
Meet in the middle.
We'll do it this way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's
good. Does that work?
You got my skinny side.
I did. I got the same filter on for me.
I'll give you the box to take.
Oh, that'll be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Brogdon.
I'll tell you one thing that I really liked about him. Well, there's two things, really. He is a horse lover.
Okay.
And he always wore those really pretty shirts, like my dad used to.
That was usually why he was gone, because he was attending the horse.
Yep.
So that was, yeah, that's right.
That's where last one was, yep.
So you're going to do the meeting tonight?
I'm sorry, ma'am?
Is your meeting tonight? You're going to be?
Yeah, I'll be doing, yeah.
Okay, you're here till the end of the year.
That's the last meeting.
So.
Unless I decide in a year or two, maybe I'd like to try again.
Submit your application.
It'll be a tough interview process.
I'll speak up for you.
Thank you.
So we'll go on. Item three is a work program, and Jerry will report on the status of the 2019 work program, and we'll discuss the 2020 program.
Right. That's why we're here. Before I start, I want to say my thank yous. I want to thank our staff. We have an awesome staff. It's very dedicated to the work that we do day in and day out, and they have an awesome attitude and aptitude for this work, and it's greatly appreciated. They all take on a lot of activities, permits, development cases, and quite a few of the things that we're going to be talking about on the work program is a result of their activity. I want to thank the Planning and Zoning Commission. We've had some really good cases this year. We've had a diverse set of input and interest. I think that's a big part of what planning is, to have a full spectrum of ideas about how to approach things. And so that's always welcome. I think we've taken forward some really good recommendations to the Board of Adjustment on the development cases that we've had, and to supervisors and to the Board of Supervisors. I want to thank you also for your support to our department on the many things that we are before you on. I just really appreciate your leadership and look forward to working with you in 2020. So with that, this first hour, the reason why we're here is to talk about the 2020 work program.
You said the first hour?
Yeah, well, the first hour. And I'm planning on talking for maybe about 15 minutes. This is an interactive session. Right. And so we had like 23 things that we were to take on. We finished about four of those things. We've got, I think, plates spinning on another seven of those things, which are a part of tier one and a few things in tier two. I just want to kind of, in retrospect, part of the reason why we've accomplished what we have, lack of some of that activity, it was due to Emily, my previous planner. Her husband graduated from Iowa State and ended up moving back to Wisconsin, which is where she's from. Emily did a great job, and we miss her. And then the other thing that took up a lot of time, a lot of Amelia's time, was the census. We've been working on that for the last couple of years. And the review of the addresses, which relate to the location of the dwellings, which get to the number of people in the households. All that work that we did, primarily Emily worked on, was sent back to us. And because Emily was gone, Amelia took that on and reviewed all those. There were 109 appeals that needed a response, and they required a written document for each appeal, a separate written document. And you had to be able to justify why a unit was considered a dwelling. Because we're local, we're aware of, in the county we allow accessory structures to be converted for living quarters, whereas, at the federal level, they're not aware of that. So, I don't know, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, there were a lot of those. And then a lot of appeals because of the funkiness of how driveways look, where you'd have somebody's driveway that was like a flag lot where you have a little skinny thing out to the roadway. Well, the census expects the address point to be by the road. If it's back here, they reject it as a dwelling. So the appeals were submitted, and they will let us know if they accept them or not, but they don't give us a timeline. So we're still waiting to hear back on that. But otherwise, we're done. And we submitted the new addresses, too. So new address, new construction since March of last year. We submitted for the county, Story City, and Gilbert. And Huxley, right?
Are you talking about the new construction
yeah.
program?
So all new housing units in those cities, and the other cities did their own.
Right. Where permits were issued March of 2018, where they will be constructed and completed by Census Day, April 1. So that was a separate project that she took. So it's all about the census, and it took several months to get through.
Jerry, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So the Federal Bureau wants to know the number of dwelling as well as the number of people.
Well, ultimately, that's what it's all about, trying to count the number of people in a jurisdiction. They do that by census blocks. And part of that prep work was trying to figure out where all the addresses were, which equate to dwelling units. And so that's what we're trying to explain, that they were challenged by the census, and so we had to prove that this information that we sent you was correct, and this is why it's correct. Amelia got very creative. Like there were people that are living in accessory structures, and we use where some of these folks came to public meetings and indicated that they provided their name and their address, and so
sign-in sheets.
Sign-in sheets.
Wow.
Nice.
I bet those were just really in good order and alphabetized, right?
Perfect.
Ours are.
So one of the big things that we accomplished, we tamed the beast, and that's the stormwater ordinance amendment and erosion control. We now have an ordinance that's based on the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual criteria. We pulled out extracted parts of that so that applicants, property owners, builders know what Story County's criteria is when they submit for a project.
And the erosion control. So folks under 1 acre that don't get a state permit for erosion control, we now have our own erosion control requirements at the county level as well. And then part of that is grading permits. So we get this question a lot. I'm not building a structure. I'm just doing grading for new driveway, pond, that kind of thing. So we now have a grading permit as part of the erosion control ordinance as well. And that is on the website.
Right. What prompted us to work on it was a subdivision plot that was submitted in Northwest Story County. And it really got the subdivision landowners to the east really interested in it, excited in it, and it lit up our phones and our emails. And so, we decided that it was time to try to take some action to try to improve the situation. And so I think ultimately this is going to help projects that we're here. We have a requirement now that an engineer is required to review and the layout. It's being tested right now. We have it's actually just two dwellings, but they're very large dwellings on the south side of Ames, south of Duff, on the west side of the road, that is currently being reviewed by our department. We're working with the property owner's engineer on the civil that they need. So, review of the land evaluation site assessment. We have a requirement for conditional use permit applications and rezonings that get submitted. We go through this analysis using our GIS system to determine whether or not property is highly productive. The goal that's based in our comprehensive plan is to protect and preserve our rich agricultural resources and our natural resources. And so part of the task was to determine whether or not any changes needed to be made. And through our review and input from the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, it was decided that we needed to be more transparent. So Gabe, our intern, spent a lot of time this summer and this semester working on, with staff, addressing responses to, there's like 10, 11 questions that are, that we respond to when we get a request, to actually make that determination as to whether or not the property is highly productive. And it's a scale of 0 to 300, scores over 267 are rendered to be highly productive. And so if somebody submits a rezoning request and has a high LISA score, they cannot even request to change the land use because the goal is to try to preserve our farm ground. Same for some conditional use permit applications. If it has a high LISA, that proposed use cannot occur at that location. So we worked on our transparency, and I think everybody's waiting for me to do the final review before we actually launch it. So we're excited about offering that to the general public. So now, you know, people who are interested in acquiring land or property owners who would like to do a division to create space for another house, they can see on our website what it is that we look at, how we evaluate properties. Talked about the census, 109 appeals. We've got plate spinning on 7 of the items in Tier 1 and Tier 2. I'll just go through them briefly. If you have questions, if you have comments, please add to what I say. Construction, demolition, landfill. This is something that was on the work program when I got here in 2015. We've been working on it for several years, and we actually have a couple of cities who are interested in working with Story County, and we've drafted 28 agreements that are being reviewed by Keith Morgan, and then we're going to get it off to the county attorney's office. The city of Nevada is interested in allowing us to share some space on the west side of town, Airport Road, east side of the road. Maxwell is interested in allowing us to share some of their park space, but only for like the debris or the vegetation that might come from like maybe a windstorm or a tornado or a flooding. Nevada, all debris that could be collected.
How big an area?
It was pretty decent size. Yeah. Do you recall the?
I mean, it's like.
It's actually part of their industrial park, yeah. But okay. The city owns the land, and so. We would be working with them to use that site if we have an event. Mm-hmm. And then if they get to a situation where they need to repurpose it or sell it, which ultimately it's for industrial use, then they have a plan to locate their wastewater treatment plant south of Nevada, about 2 miles, 2.5 miles. Mm-hmm. They already went through the subdivision planning process. They need to get a conditional use permit. But they said we could use that space, and that is a huge parcel.
100 acres.
It's huge.
Oh my gosh.
The industrial park one has the usable acres is probably around 20, but it's larger than that. It's just that usable space meets the buffer requirements from houses and isn't in the floodplain and that kind of thing.
Yeah, sometimes cities take the position that they'll ask for forgiveness. Keith Morgan, you know, if you talk to him about the need to really designate places, Story County is way ahead of the curve in terms of the work that we've done to try to get to this, because a part of this is to try to obtain approval from the DNR, because they treat this as a temporary landfill, and so there's a permit that is required. They want to inspect the site, they issue a temporary permit. So that's something that we need to obtain. There's like a site layout design criteria that FEMA suggests. And then we know that the discussions that we've had with Darren Moon, the county engineer, they're going to be busy clearing roads, so they're not going to have equipment or resources available. So likely it's going to involve us working with like a third party contractor hauler. And then Polk County, the Waste Management Authority, currently have a unit that deals with just hazardous materials. And so we were going to work with them to have like a certain set of days where they would come up and set up shop, so to speak, on site to deal with any hazardous materials that might be collected. Because in a disaster, the idea is to try to organize this so that through the public communication outreach segment of this, you educate the general public about how to help us help them. And it's all about sorting materials, like having a pile for the lumber and the roofing and the white items, appliances, and all that. And it all needs to be brought to like a public right of way.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with developments, right, isn't it?
Right. And so the goal is to have them organize it, and then we would collect it, bring it back to the site, process it, and we would like to recycle as much as possible, and then take the balance of it to the landfill. But we've been told by the Boone County Landfill Administrator that, you know, in a major event, that we should not expect to bring off that material there. So that means that we'd be working with the surrounding different material. Yeah.
Let's hope we don't have to use it.
Right.
So the DNR certification, is that where they just come out? Since this is all kind of hypothetical planning, right? Hopefully we never need to use it, but we're prepared in case we need to. We're not going to develop it as an empty landfill, right? Or as a, right? We're just going to designate it. We're going to have a plan, and then the DNR would come out and look and say, oh yeah, this
criteria,
basically this space is good, or this space is, here's what you need to change in your plan. Or
yeah,
if you need to implement it, you need to do these physical things on the site so that it meets the certification, or how does that work?
So the DNR doesn't necessarily pre-approve the sites.
Well,
they can give us...
We've been told that they don't.
But they would give us, like, they've sent us siting guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the event of a disaster, depending on if the state disaster is declared, there are certain waivers for sites that can be obtained as well. So if something didn't meet a guideline, there'd be potential for
right.
a waiver of like the full landfill site.
Because once that disaster happens, everything's like on time schedule.
Right.
If we get a site located, we only have, we've been told like 60 days, which isn't a lot of time. And that was real concerned with some of the folks that we talked to at Beta about this. Well, how long is this material going to be, you know? And so the goal would be to be as efficient as we can,
right,
and get it out of there. But yeah, it's, there's a lot of moving pieces to it. But the agreement, having a place to go, is a big part of it. We've had discussions with landowners, but ultimately, we had two that were interested and then ultimately decided that they weren't, because it does impact the land, and if the land is not productive for a number of years because of all the heavy truck traffic mm-hmm. on it, you know, turn it back into low crop production. So the few that we've talked to have been those that have had contracts to store stolen material. They're interested for a fee, and that's a second part of this that we can explore. But for right now, we've got two cities who are interested. Okay. The next thing is auditing our regulations to compare with smart growth strategies to see if they limit disaster impacts. We actually put together an analysis. Smart growth strategies are from the American Planning Association, and they cover a lot of things, but primarily a focus of trying to be, you know, having jurisdictions be more efficient in their land use planning, promoting mixed uses so that you have commercial and residential in the same area so that you can limit the use of automobiles and you know, reduce the amount of usage of fossil fuels and that type of thing. So we looked at the growth, smart growth strategies, we looked at the land development regulations, and I think for the most part we're in a pretty decent situation because we have floodplain regulations which recently were amended to increase, we strengthened them. We went from a requirement of having an 18-inch fill requirement for a lot of proposed improvements to requiring a 3-foot fill requirement. We have a requirement to protect our drainage ways, creeks and rivers through easements when we receive subdivisions. We have a LISA system. But I think some of these tasks that are on our work program will help to further accomplish this goal of trying to limit our disaster impacts. And I can tell you when we have discussions with people on the phone or at the counter and properties have floodplain, it's always something that we talk about, you know, that we it's discouraged, we can't outright prohibit it. Sometimes there's no other way to do an improvement. Sometimes it's a public improvement for a bridge or a utility. It's unavoidable. But we do try to do our best to try to limit that. So this was actually before the Planning and Zoning Commission. And like I said, I think some of these tasks that we're going to be working on or are working on now will help us to improve or limit impacts to disasters. We were asked to look at all the subdivisions in the county and determine whether or not the streets in those subdivisions were dedicated for public use. The subdivisions that have roads are owned and maintained by the landowners of the subdivisions compared to like the public road, county road system. So we reviewed through previous interns, the current intern, Gabe Nelson, has done a lot of work on this. He and I did site visits at over 100 subdivisions this summer. So as an intern, I think that's awesome. I don't think you could say that you visited every subdivision in any jurisdiction, whether it's a city or a county. But the resolutions that we found, the documents that we found, were really, some were unclear. Quite a few of them were indicated that they were publicly dedicated for public use. With regard to signage, we were required to look at that. There's all types of signage. There's speed limit signs, there's stop signs, there's signs that indicate that there's children at play, and they're made of all different types of materials, different heights, different types of structures. And so we put together a recommendation based on the research, the information that we collected, the field research that we did, and this item is actually the Planning and Zoning Commission tonight. Part of what we think we need to do is have a resolution that requires subdivisions with roads to be publicly dedicated, whether it's a private road or a public road. And then we've got some...
And then we need a standard signage requirement.
Well, it's a guideline. The way it's worded, it's not required because they're public, you know, the roads are publicly owned and maintained, that if you're going to install signs, we're asking that information be disclosed by the HOA, by the developer, or the builder, but that we're going to refer them to like a national standard so that we have some consistency of these, because most people know or recognize what a stop sign is. They know about what size it is, where it's, you know, its proximity to the grade, yield signs, children. So again, that item is before the Planning and Zoning Commission for discussion.
So would that apply to new developments only?
Primarily for subdivisions.
Yeah, so not existing ones. Because it'll be part of your future permitting process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Next thing, Ames River Fringe Plan. Every year we have something on Ames River Fringe. The Ames River Fringe Plan is an agreement that addresses proposed land use within the 2-mile limit of the city of Ames. It's an agreement with Story County, the city of Gilbert, and the city of Ames. It was adopted in 2008, and in 2011, a 28E agreement was adopted. And it was for a 5-year term that was extended automatically unless there were issues brought about by the 3 jurisdictions. So it was extended for another 5. So that means it's going to expire in 2021. Our staff has had discussions with the staff at the city of Ames, and they are supportive in working with Story County in extending the Ames River Fringe Plan. We also had communication with Ethan Anderson with the county attorney's office about whether or not we could put together like a resolution that the Planning Zoning Commission could consider, Board of Supervisors could take action on to acknowledge the fact that this agreement will expire in 2021, and our interest, Story County's interest in working with Gilbert and Ames and working on amendments. And he indicated that's something that we can do.
We met with the city of Ames a year ago.
You're talking about the comprehensive plan?
Yeah, where they're updating, where City of Ames is updating their comprehensive plan. And it's been longer than that, 2 years ago. It's been a while.
Well, they recently started on it, and it's to be completed like in the summer of next year.
But they're updating that, so I'm wondering if, because if the city's...
The Ames 2040?
If the City of Ames is right, revising their planning.
That's their focus, their comprehensive plan.
Then we should probably review that in light of the...
And that's why I'm suggesting the resolution to
the kind of... urban fringe plan, to make sure that our understanding of that agreement and Gilbert's understanding of that agreement and Ames all are still on the same page. Because if Ames is changing their view, then maybe we're not on the same page.
I can tell you that their staff is on the same page. The planning staff is with the fact that it's going to expire in 2021 and that there's interest in continuing to work with the county on land use planning.
I'm interested in retaining the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. I just want to make sure that we don't auto-extend it, that we actively review it and that we actively look at it.
Right.
In light of Ames' change to their plan.
Right. It's, and they want to focus on their land use plan that they're working on before they start working on the
I agree, but if their land use plan is revised, that's going to impact the Ames Urban.
Can I clarify, because I think maybe you two are talking close to the same thing. They're willing to extend until they're done with their new plan, and
yeah,
then we'll be going back in to negotiate.
Right.
Yeah, so...
That's what I'm trying. Yeah.
So, Mark, you're not saying you don't want to extend at all.
Extension, right? Not
you don't want one? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I would only want to give a temporary extension, right? Not let's auto renew for another 5 years.
Right.
And Jerry's talking about a temporary extension.
Yeah,
just till they get their 2040 plan done.
Okay.
Because until they make decisions on that and the direction they want the city to go, I mean, whatever they decide there is going to impact the urban fringe.
Okay.
So it's simply that this isn't the time. We're not going to get it done. With their timeline on the 2040 plan, we're not going to get a revision of urban fringe plan, a good review of it done.
So Jerry, with you feeling that this will be done February 2020, is that the same time period that Kelly Dingman is looking at?
Yeah, what I'm talking about is like drafting the resolution for us to acknowledge the interest in extending it, and then along with that, working like some kind of schedule or timeframe to start having discussions about proposed amendments.
So they would actually like to start the discussion about proposed amendments before they're done with 2040.
Well, I guess I was thinking that there would be internal discussions with, you know, amongst the county planning zoning commission and the board of supervisors, unless everyone sees that differently. Unless we would wait and then start those together.
I don't even know really how far they are along. Linda and I are both planning on going to the 2040 discussion tonight. So I know when I went to a previous one, and they were still trying to decide what format their consultant was saying, well, which, you know, kind of format do you want us to look at, which plans? And so it didn't seem like they were very far along. So I'm just trying to nail down here about what's best for the county to do as we look at them proceeding forward. So the fact that if we did temporarily extend it for a year or 18 months, knowing that they are shooting for next spring and may not, or summer may not make it, yeah, it's up the road, giving us more opportunity to have those discussions. Now, I've already talked to a couple of the city council members about how important I think it is to have an extension. But, you know, so I'm just trying to get a feel here at what particular point in time, you know, should we nail that in.
I would bet that when staff get into it and start working on it, they'll find some things that they can work on regardless of what direction Ames decides it's going to go. Mm-hmm. I think they might end up having to say, well, we can't deal with this part now, we might have to wait. But I can't help but think that when people have been using this process for as long as they have, that they don't have some opinions on how the process can be improved or how certain things can. So I don't have any problem with work starting in a few months.
Oh, I don't have any problem with the work starting either.
You're just saying when reasonably to have it concluded. And
right.
We probably don't know that right now.
Well, and I guess what's your vision on actually, because I think we've got some information on previous input that we received on things that need to be addressed, like starting that
transportation
corridors. Do you see that that's something that we could start on internally
before
we actually go to the table with?
And did not, Mark, didn't your board do that? I mean, you already.
I think that's what he's talking about, is a lot of the feedback and the proposals are things that we've brought up over time.
There was a letter that was prepared that was sent to the Ames City Council that addressed.
So we are talking about the same thing.
Board of supervisors had that we wanted to be included.
Here, my concern about that moving it forward, I mean, how we move it forward and timing is that I was hearing several months ago that there were concerns among some Ames City Council people, concerns of, in general, about the fact when Gilbert had voted, I think it was last year, help me on this, when Gilbert voted down annexation.
It was the land use, which
the
led
land
to the annexation.
Yes, okay. So there was at least some undercurrent there that why would they get back into that, especially with having to deal with Gilbert, since Gilbert was going to be in their way to annex. That's where I'm concerned.
And there's going to be more, right? One of the things preventing growth in Ames and Gilbert for so long was water treatment capacity, which they're addressing with their water treatment plan. There's that new development that's happening on the south side of Gilbert. So I expect there to be more friction about as those two communities grow closer to each other about how that will happen. So that's what I want to make sure that we're that this isn't being driven only by Ames, right? Oh, Ames. Ames updated their 2040 plan, and therefore that's what we're all going to agree to. I think that's their plan, what's Gilbert's plan, what's the county's plan, and again, come together for an agreement.
And there's some questions when we first got involved in reviewing the Ames comprehensive plan, having discussions with their consultants about whether, you know, what their vision was with the interim fringe plan and the 2040 plan that they were working on, because we wanted to make sure that we still have an active Ames and fringe plan agreement in place. And at the time, they weren't really sure how that was going to play out. So I haven't heard anything different. So
how is,
I know that their staff is supportive.
How is Nevada played in now? I mean, they now touch. Okay, so how does that play into moving forward? Has their staff given feedback?
Well, there's no urban fringe.
Well, yeah, but, okay, but, well, there would be right, north and south of where they're connecting on that mile or
those, something. Those discussions all happened when Ames expanded, right? When Ames designated up to 560th or whatever it was. They,
so when you say that, though, but from then creating the new urban fringe plan, you say those discussions have it. Are they just saying they aren't going to include Nevada in at all?
They haven't. That's why it's Ames, Gilbert, and Story County.
Still, because that I do remember way back. I covered it.
Well, so, to include Nevada, they would have amended.
No, I'm saying about are they including Nevada going forward? That's what I'm talking about. Are they including going forward?
I don't think anybody's made any decisions.
I haven't heard it from their
staff
or the chamber or whatever. So I don't know if they've made interest in this.
At this point, I think getting Ames' attention to the extent of simply extending it so we don't lose it during a time that we really can't be changing it. I think that's the important thing now, and then some of those other things will come along in that process.
Some of the development that's also happening to the south, you know, you could also bring in Huxley, and Huxley's developing more than, I mean.
And Kelly.
Well, Kelly.
Yeah.
Kelly, for sure. Because down in Washington Township. Starting to look like Franklin Township.
Anyway, I think it's a good point. Let's extend it as is, but temporary. Once Ames has nailed down there, because it really is the driving.
Mm-hmm. So you can check with them to see what they, in terms of an ending date, how long to extend it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Perry, is Gilbert copied in on all this correspondence as well? Because my take on the whole, the issues that Gilbert has had with the fringe plan is that they've been kind of thought of as the stepchild of this, and I think that that has got to end from their standpoint. I think Gilbert is putting their foot down and saying, you know, we're going to have a Gettysburg on the Fort Myer property if you guys don't give us some respect.
Right. To be honest with you,
I don't live in Gilbert.
I don't know if Ames or their city council or... I heard there was some discussions about involving them in like the Ames comprehensive planning process, but I don't think that they have come together with like on like where that line would be, like who would annex to what, and that seems to be something that would be essential or a component.
Well, the Country Club already made their agreement. You know, they made their Xenia. Agreement is predicated on Ames annexing up to an.
Yeah, there's a pre-annexation agreement.
Yeah, right.
When we
approved
that.
They support
being
annexed. Well, the north side comes down.
That was, we did a conditional use permit for those three houses that are developed on 190th now. Is that 190th?
Yes.
That are on the north side of the Country Club. So that was all part of the annexation up to that point. Also the development on the west side of George Washington Harbor, mm-hmm. south of Cameron School Road, same thing.
But isn't that in the process of being annexed? But that was 100%.
There was discussion about annexing.
They had to agree
but
to
I
being
don't,
annexed, but yeah. I don't know that it's actually
it's,
in process.
I haven't seen anything start on it. No.
All the construction on the Country Club had to be done in accordance with the Pacific Board.
Right.
Okay. In the interest of time, we've got 15 minutes. I'm going to skip ahead to complete streets. Part of the task there is we were to kind of look at the existing system, look at proposed improvements, and figure out ways that we can increase the usability, primarily bicyclists. Marcus, with his background, he came to us from the Crescent Council of Governments and Idaho MPO, and transportation planning, trails planning is his thing.
What number is three?
I'm down complete streets.
Tier two.
Tier two. Okay, I heard four different things. Tell it to me once. Where are you?
Tier two, item 10.
Thank you.
So we had actually had discussions with Leanne and Darren, and because we're not going to have a transportation component plan, transportation plan, we actually had discussions with Mike. We're trying to figure out a way to not drop this item because we think it's important, especially as we grow. We've got a pretty decent trails network. We've got a decent road network, and we're trying to figure out ways to kind of merge the two. Marcus has been working on this. You want to add?
So after talking with Darren and Mike, what it's kind of more coming down to, or at least at this moment in time, is facilitating the conversation between the two. What a lot of it may come down to what Mike needs when it's a trail segment that for one reason or another you can't get the land for to connect to ends, and then how secondary roads may be able to come in and do that as part of their on system network, make those connections, as well as getting the DOT involved. Right now they're planning on February letting the project for Highway 65, which will mean adding shoulders similar to R38, not quite as wide, but similar. That would be a huge link for the heart of Iowa to Colo, and eventually 65 up to Ziering would get the same treatment, which would essentially almost complete this full loop for Story County between the trail systems that are already there, and the rest of the plan. It would just be creating a link between Story City and bringing that down. So it's kind of what we're talking about, but when we were talking about complete streets, everyone was getting nervous because complete streets from an urban setting is 8-foot sidewalks and protected bike lanes and everything like that. So everyone's up in arms. Well, we don't need that in the county, right? It looks probably different depending on where you are. So just need to kind of sit down with them a little bit more and figure out what our part is. We're just kind of facilitating, keeping everyone talking.
We actually reviewed a subdivision plat west of Huxley that Gabe worked on, where we thought we could provide some assistance. There was a existing trail system that they were actually using the highway as part of the linkage, and the plan actually showed for a cut through this property. Long and the short is the property owners decided not to do it. But, and so, I mean, there may be some things that we might be able to explore putting.
But Darren's coming in that situation and he's going to help create that link. So, really facilitating that long term and making big links.
So, that one we already know about. I mean, it's already on the 5-year plan. Yep. In fact, are we doing it next year? This next summer?
I don't know when it's on Darren's plan. But
so, the one that you're talking about, or other ones in the future, are these projects that are on our 5-year roads plan right now?
Well, that would be part of, with Mike's work, it's a little bit harder sometimes looking forward on how those linkages can happen.
And where I'm headed for is priorities. Okay, so I don't, I'm headed for priorities. You've got some new proposed items here that maybe we would want to look at as higher priorities than worrying about this particular item. If we don't have them on the 5-year plan and we don't have an expectation to put them on at least the first 2 or 3 years of it. So I was just kind of looking at allocation of work and resources with what you got here. That's why I asked. Okay.
Right. Some of this may take longer than 5 years.
And it might. Okay.
If there's a realization of that this is really long range planning.
Mm-hmm. Which is what it comes down to. Because the DOT, letting them know where we're seeing possible linkages on their system, that's not a something we can tell them a year before and work it into it. It's a very long process. So we just kind of lucked out on this one, that part of their new safety implementation matrices that they have to hit includes improved safety. And right now, 65 has no shoulder. So kind of just lucked out on that one, that that's part of their new safety matrix. But a lot of it is long-term, but it's embedded planning that can't be done in just a year.
Understand that. I do, but I, like I said, I'm looking at priorities here about if there's anything we want to look at moving up on the work program from a tier, or propose new items that would come in and actually move other items down a tier.
Let me go back to the phrase we're using here. You said there's concerns about using complete streets design when you're talking about any unincorporated areas. Can that be changed, or is that a CT? Is that what it says in the CTC, and we have to stay with that?
I think if this is a work program, we can modify that.
Because what I've seen in Ames. You know,
when I say complete streets, you're thinking of.
I'm thinking of Ames. I'm thinking of.
Very specific on the guidelines.
And we're not. Right. We're never going to have that in the county.
No, and that's the problem with complete streets, or what happens a lot of times, is loss in translation. Complete streets is doing what's necessary that makes sense. So in the county, like R38, that makes sense. You just have a little bit wider shoulder, you have a bike area on there. That's what a complete street in the county looks like, not.
Okay. And I see it says as appropriate to Story County. If you're comfortable, you can explain, no, that does not mean we're going to have the Labyrinth system. It's in Ames every place.
Right, but this causes a lot of headache right off the bat, where we can not have to go into the conversation with everyone with their walls up of like, I don't want any part of this because this is going to cost a lot. If we can change that to something else, it may make the conversation a lot easier to handle.
Mm-hmm. Even just parenthetically saying, you know, the smart streets, bike shoulders, right? Something just short to not make them think of, you know, Ontario.
Right.
Anything else on that?
Not on that. I have one thing real quick. Okay. Is this item 14, the accessory structures and exploring new accessory structures, is that the, I don't know what to call it other than the Steele Amendment?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's Karen Steele's idea of, as we have an aging population, and how do we provide, you know, mother-in-law quarters where we currently prohibit a secondary residence on, you know,
accessory dwelling units.
Accessory dwellings,
you might have heard it called. Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of requests. We've had a lot in this last year with people wanting to do things within the confines of their single family dwelling to allow some space for their parents or siblings.
Right.
You know, create like a separate little unit with a separate kitchen or kitchenette, bedroom, bathroom.
Currently, it's prohibited within, you know, you'd have to subdivide or whatever, and
could you not just add on here in prison?
Theoretically.
You haven't met some of these people's in last year.
He's not going to have to either.
The ordinance only permits one single family dwelling, but that's part of what we're getting into. I think we're going to be going through a transformation. We're going to have to explore allowing maybe some things to occur, because it's not uncommon for people to have a bedroom in a basement. It's not uncommon for people to have a kitchenette in their basement. But yet we're stuck on this requirement that you can only have one single family dwelling. And so when we get these requests in to do new dwellings, that's a big part of our review.
Technically a violation.
And so if we see a separate unit within a unit, we have to kick those out and say that can't happen that way, but you know, can you reconfigure it? Especially if we see two separate accesses to the same.
The concern is the family changes because somebody moves on and then it becomes a rental unit.
Right.
That's not what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, but I guess what I'm getting at is I think
we're seeing
a need out there to try to loosen up the regulations to allow some of this to happen.
Because it would be nice if there was a couple of acres to be able to say, I'm going to convert this accessory building into an accessory dwelling, or even construct a small accessory dwelling. But in 10 or 15 or 20 years, you know, or in whatever foreseeable future, what do I do with it? Right. So
I understand it very well.
We've had these, yes. Anyway, that's okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, it is something that we really are interested in working on. There's a lot of the staff are very interested in digging into that one.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
The problem with like converting an accessory structure that was permitted for cold storage, and then it's going to be, you know, the use is going to be living quarters. What standard will that be? I mean, that's the big question, which is kind of a good segue to propose future new items. We would like to do an exploration. Find out what cities in the county, what counties, adjacent counties have building codes. Currently, we have a requirement that all new improvements, single-family homes, accessory structures, are required to be completed within 18 months. So we do the review, we kick out the preliminary zoning permit. Within 6 months, they have to contact us for their first inspection. That first inspection is to check to make sure that it complies with the site plan that was submitted. Are they meeting the setback requirements that's shown on the site plan? Does the, you know, the footprint match up? But again, the project is to be completed within 18 months, and we don't have a building code. We don't have an adopted building code, so we're not looking at the plumbing. We're not looking at the electrical system. We're not looking at the heating and cooling system. And so we have to take their word for it that the project is completed. You know, when I first got here, we were issuing the preliminary and the final about at the same time. Now we try to do, we try to keep track of that 18-month time period. Marcus has been helping Stephanie keep track of that. And so, again, we would like to do this exploration to just see what cities out there, what counties out there have building codes. What are the pros and cons? What are the costs involved in doing something like this? We know that there's been a few fires with single-family homes. I have no idea what caused those things. And again, when these
no, I was going to say, Jerry, all buildings are under the Iowa code, plumbing, electrical, HVAC. They are under the code. You're supposed to build to the Iowa building code. Now,
we don't have an adopted standard.
I know you don't have inspection, but you know there are private companies that do inspection. They're doing them for Huxley and Maxwell and other towns.
Right, because those cities have adopted national standards. Probably.
All they do is adopt the state codes. Now they can put amendments on the state codes. But all the municipalities in the state adopt the national code. Well, the state adopts the national code. Then the municipalities can adopt the state code, and they can make some amendments to it, more restrictive, not less restrictive. So the code's already there.
But are you saying that the county and non-incorporated areas also have we adopted
they
it,
fall
Jerry?
Under the
it takes the jurisdiction to adopt by ordinance those standards.
It does.
Yes.
Okay. So the county could adopt.
Yes,
those
and when it comes down to, you know, projects where property owners want to save costs, Jay, maybe saving costs to them, you know, in situations where it might impact safety. So we would just like to explore, see what's out there. We'll look into what you're saying.
How long do you think that would take? How much staff?
We would like to make that a tier one. So sometime before February.
So it's tier two on that.
Yeah.
It's tier one.
Does that say tier two? Jerry, to argue with you a little, the state does inspect all electricals.
Yeah. We refer people to them.
So there's no reason you couldn't do the other trades.
Unless it's an accessory structure for ag use.
I do know that in my previous 2 years, my first 2 years on the board, every time a building code for unincorporated Story County came up, there was great pushback
at the board table, even among the members, of the three of us sitting up there, and certainly among various citizens who live in the unincorporated areas. Okay, and so as I take a look at this, and I look at a long list, and I know how much we spent on watersheds, and we've had our watershed group for a year, it is not where I would put this at a tier one. Okay, because I believe that while you look at it and explore this or whatever, then people are going to say that the county board of supervisors are interested in adopting code in the unincorporated areas. So,
well, that's why we have it.
I understand that's why you want it there.
I think that there is interest, though, because it does, it is something that comes up on a regular basis.
And we have no idea what standards are being applied. There are contractors that probably are applying those standards, but when it comes down to saving costs for different improvements, I don't know what's getting cut. I mean, who knows? I need to save $5,000. Can you help me save $5,000? I'll do this project with you. You can cut out $5,000 in this proposal. So we're not inspecting the electrical, plumbing, or the heating and cooling systems.
How do we compare with other counties?
Well, that's what he wants to find out.
So you're not just looking at the other counties. Okay.
So even what is the expectation? I think part of it, the discussion will then come, are we a rural county or are we an urban county?
Well, you're saying adjacent counties.
Polk County is an urban county. There's no question about it.
I think it's worth spending time to look into and say, just to know what the other counties are doing. And if it is just a matter of, hey, we should adopt the state standards so that we can at least refer when people are asking. We've adopted the state standards, so you need to adhere to it. And then at least we have something that's enforceable. It's not anything special. It's not anything tricky. It's not anything that we've spent a great deal of time on. It's just looking at what do the counties do? What are the state requirements? And you know, maybe we just do that. I think that totally makes sense.
I like what Marva said.
And I wouldn't mind seeing data, not just on adjacent counties, but similar sized counties.
Okay.
You know, if you looked at like the top dozen counties in population, I think stories, where are we ranking now?
We rank
9th, 6th.
If you actually did our population today,
we're among
6th.
The top.
Yeah.
So why not about the top 10 or so? I think we get some better idea.
I know Polk County does inspection.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they do. I wonder about Dallas. As fast as Dallas is growing.
Yeah, what do you do when you're unincorporated? That's the question.
Exactly. Right. And what is the expectation of the people who are living in unincorporated and the people who are buying in unincorporated?
I think it would help also when you're looking towards what do I do with my land, or I'm looking at buying land, to know what the standards are and what they kind of will be. Right. So I think it's, I don't want it to be restrictive. Right, and I'm with Jerry on that. I just want it to be transparent.
A couple things I want to bring up. Do this
about an hour ago.
I know. Well, I promised 15 minutes. I'm sorry.
You're already done.
We had good discussion. It's all about the discussion.
I will be leaving for another reason and be back shortly, though. So
we would like to ask the board to consider waiving fees, like for zoning permits, development case applications for projects that involve cities, schools, and the state. We want to require that they submit the applications, review them, but not require the fee. But I think to do that, we need to find out what other departments in the county are doing, because I have no idea, like what community services is doing or any of the other county departments.
Question was cities. We're only issuing permits in the unincorporated areas. So are you thinking about like Nevada and their water treatment
fund?
That's what I wrote here. I just want to make sure.
Sometimes there's pushback on that. Not sometimes, all the time that we get pushback. And I don't have the authority in the zoning ordinance to waive that. So that's why we would like the board to consider. consider adopting a policy, a resolution, taking action on a resolution to waive that. But what we'll do is reach out to all the county departments to figure out what's being done and then report back.
Can you let us know the pros and cons on that?
Sure.
Because I agree, I think it's a good idea. But if it's going to be like a big hit to the county as
right.
far as mm-hmm. time spent versus lost income.
Yeah.
Maybe a discount.
That's a slippery slope. Then what comes next? Private schools, churches,
mm-hmm.
everybody
right.
else wants the same thing. How much money are we talking about a year?
Right,
how
yeah, we don't know.
Oh, like revenues that we get from cities?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep
charges.
Right.
This is a mouse fart of dollars in the big picture of things. These are $20 million projects, and they're asking for what, $100 waiver?
$50.
It could be $200-$300. So it's just something that they don't expect.
The squirrel that should have to.
Are they asking for us to waive them?
They are not wanting to pay the fee. Our response is that we don't have the authority not to request it, so it is required.
Status quo.
So,
are there other counties that waive fees?
Where I came from, we did. Yeah, it was actually an ordinance.
In the interest of time, investigate.
Okay. Yeah, and then the last couple of things deal with strategic plan and watershed assessment. We have high priorities where our department is identified. We are not the lead on a lot of these projects. We're mentioned with other departments, and so we're going to bring those into the fold, into the work program. Watershed assessment, the high priorities, I think there's two of those. There's a medium priority, tier one, and then strategic plan items, tier two, which will take us into the summer. Does anybody have any questions about anything I said or didn't say?
So just to clarify what you just said, so of the watershed priority, the strategic plan ones, you're going to issue a new draft then that then assigns them to the correct tier?
Right. Yeah, I didn't want to throw all the new stuff, propose new items in with the existing. That might be too confusing, but we'll put together a new document for review for the planning zone commission and board.
So then,
Lisa, did you have any questions?
No.
I just want to say it's very ambitious.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. We have a whole lot of development going on in our county. And one of the things I think that's really important to us all is that development takes place in a safe and orderly manner. And I've seen the Planning and Zoning Commission address a lot of those issues before, the traffic studies, some other things that came up. And I know I've had some people say, well, I live out in the country, I should be able to do what I want to. And I simply say, look, we have a lot of development going on in this county. We have lots of people. The population of the unincorporated area is the second highest population if you look at, you know, look at it as a city. So we have a big responsibility there. So I appreciate, personally, I'm just going to say, I appreciate an aggressive agenda.
I also appreciate taking on more and less and prioritizing it. And if you don't finish things, then they don't get finished.
Well, we set out with a goal of trying to take on as much as we possibly can. Things come up.
Have you noticed that?
And I'll tell you, I didn't say it, but we just got hit with, we've got like 8 development requests, like conditional uses, subdivisions, rezonings that we're
going to
be dealing with every week before the Planning and Zoning Commission and the board within the next month or two.
You're on story, yeah.
And then you're open to taking some of them down into lower tiers also.
Yeah, I welcome any suggestions.
Well, the parking and the lighting standards, I mean,
well,
we can certainly move those down. I'm just going to reiterate, we spent a lot of money and a lot of time and resources on watershed analysis and focusing on watershed. So I would hope that, including with the implementation of the watershed group, that in 2020 we can have some projects move forward. Even I understand you may not be the sole entity,
but if those move up that list.
Those two things, though, one of the things that connects to it is the review of the land development regulations, which we've done. We've gone through the complete review, and we've got some things that we need to address based on state or federal acts. And Amelia is organizing all that. She put together a spreadsheet. But it's going to take some time to get through that. There's going to be additional like side projects because of this review that we've been required to do. We listed that to be completed by February, likely will not be, but.
I guess I foresee the parking standards is a pretty simple fix. We have pretty forward thinking parking standards already. We just need to make sure all the uses that we allow in the code are in the parking standards table, because they're not.
Okay, we've got things that come up that are not listed.
And so that's a pretty easy fix.
It's housekeeping.
Yeah. The lighting standards, on the other hand, could be a bigger project if we want it to look at like a dark sky ordinance. Yeah. But that could be moved down. And that wasn't part necessarily of the cleanup of the ordinance.
We have the decent regulations, and the focus is that if you have lighting, that it should be directed downwards so that you don't then spill onto adjacent properties or into the right of way. So what we have in place is really pretty decent.
And there's no one pushing right now to create a dark sky ordinance, right?
I think it came up at one Planning and Zoning Commission meeting in my memory.
We have heard of lighting concerns for new developments or CUPs and things like that. So it's not unheard of, but it is. Most of these things, I would endorse seeing. Again, not so that they're so restrictive, but so that we have a reference that is available and enforceable. Right. So it's not ridiculous to say if you're going to put up lighting, it should light what needs to be lit, right? You're not just going to put a 1,000-watt bulb out and light everything.
And frankly, what we're dealing with are areas out in the country where people want to come and have rural living,
right?
And then you light it up like it's a football stadium.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that people don't want that.
And if there's not anything on the books,
they can do that.
Then you
that's
can do that.
The standard. Yeah, the standard is whatever happens.
Right.
So
sure.
Do you feel it's a tier one though?
With all the development going on?
If it's incorporated, if it's part of something else.
We're working on the review of the entire ordinance right now.
So you already have
it. We're already doing it.
Okay,
we actually
you.
Did it. We did our once through, which took us several months to get through it. And Amelia is helping us organize what our comments were. Right.
And the way these are tiered are grouped by expected finish date.
Rather than true priority.
Right. So the high priorities are completed by February or completed by April.
Yes.
Would you anticipate something like going down to the new ones? When could you even take on the watershed work or the building code exploration, for example?
Outreach, like for watershed, if that's tier one, we should have a plan in place for how we're going to. And I think a lot of that is just like the stormwater ordinance that we approved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are we going to communicate that to the general public, to builders and developers, school districts? And Mike and Leanne and I have a meeting on Friday to talk about our plan to do that.
So then we would see it at the board by February, and then it would be put into place.
Probably before
anyway.
Then. Yeah.
Okay, all right, yeah. Thank you.
Anything else? Appreciate your feedback. Very valuable. We enjoyed working with you and for you. So thank you.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Meeting two.
Madam Chairwoman, what do we need to do?
Get ready for meeting number two.
No, we're supposed to.
I don't know who would make the motion and who would second that. Claire's.
Yeah.
Okay, if we need.
If you need it, I made it.
Okay, there you go, okay.
Hello.
Hello. Joe must be on the meeting tonight.
Yes, sir. Call our regularly scheduled Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Can we have a roll call?
Smith.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
McBride.
Here.
Moore.
Here.
Mins. Absent. Sherwood.
Here.
Moss.
Here.
All right, thank you. Are there any proposed changes to the agenda as it's written? Okay, so the proposal is to move item 11.1 to move that up ahead of the 10.2. We have a second on that change.
I see.
All right, thank you. So let's just have a voice vote. Everyone that approves, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So we'll cover that first. Do we have a motion for approval of the minutes from our last meeting, which was in October?
So moved.
All right. So we have a voice vote. Aye.
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 All right. Passes. I'll sign that and get that to you, Stephanie. Thank you. Now is the time for the public for any comments, for anything that is not on the agenda already to be discussed this evening. Does anybody have any public comments? Not seeing any. We'll move on. Okay. Item we'll start with, as listed, 11.1.
Marvin, do you want to do like election of officers?
Yeah, what happened to 10? Additional items.
Are they approval of the calendar and then the election of officers?
That's okay. I missed that. My bad.
Calendar first.
All right. So we have election of officers. What do we need to do? We need to, let's do the calendar first because that'll be easy. Everybody, you have a calendar in front of you. We are the left-hand table, the Planning and Zoning Commission. Are there any proposed changes to the calendar as it sits? With continuing with first Wednesday at 4 p.m. on these proposed dates.
And as you look at the calendar, on the left-hand side is the actual meeting date. The right-hand side is the submittal date for the applications.
And in January, it changed. It's not the first Wednesday because of the holiday.
Gotcha. I saw that. That was the first one I saw. Are there any proposed changes? Any concerns? Any discussion?
I move to approve calendar.
A second.
Okay. We have a motion by Cable, a second by Moss. We can just take a voice vote on that too. Voice vote, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So the calendar stands approved for 2020. And then we have an election of officers. So we need to nominate and select a chairperson and an assistant chairperson. Currently, I'm the chair, and Cable, Jerry, is the
vice chair,
and he is departing from us.
I would like to nominate Mr. Smith for chairman.
I would second that.
All right, thank you. So we have a motion by Cable and a second by Jonathan Sherwood. There we go.
Excuse me. You might want to call for any other.
Is there any other? Thank you. there any other nominations or any discussion? Okay. I don't know, roll call vote on the motion by Cable.
Cable.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Moore.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Moss.
Yes.
Now we need a vice chair. So just sometimes there are additional meetings or things that we're requested to go to. Does not happen frequently. And honestly, I don't attend all of them, so sometimes there's better members of the commission to attend those. So but also in the case of my absence, it would be somebody that acts as the chairman to conduct the meetings. So do we have any nominees for vice chair?
I don't want Jonathan to punch me, but I would nominate Jonathan if he wants to do it.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Moore and a second by McBride. Are there any other discussions or input? Okay, so can we have a roll call vote for the motion by Moore for Sherwood to serve as vice chair?
Moore.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Moss.
Yes.
All right.
The gift that keeps on giving.
All right. Thank you. I think that's it for all of our normal year-end business for commission. So now we will move to, instead of 10.2, we're going to move forward with 11.1. So, Marcus, if this is yours, it is. Go for it.
All right. So before you is CUP 10-19. This is for Story County Integrated Roadside Vegetation Management. They want to add on to their current building. The building would be 40 by 40, which is doubling the size of the current building. It's on Story County property, and it's going to replace the building that was destroyed in 2017 that was 50 by 50. So it's currently at 60550 210th Street, Nevada. This is also where the sheriff's shooting range is. The main purpose of this addition will be storage of equipment, including but not limited to pickups, tractors, sprayers, burn equipment, planters, hydroseeded mowers, and there'll be an 8x10 herbicide storage case inside the building as well. So as you can see right there, it's kind of a large picture where it is. The existing building is just north here, and it will double the size in that footprint. It is outside of the floodplain that is across the parcel here. Here's a site plan. This section is what the addition would be. This is the current building. This door right here leads to the bathroom that county employees have access to on site. The rest of the building will be secured just to IRVM staff. Overhead. Here is this herbicide storage area. It is underneath the DNR's requirements for how much they have to have before they have to start reporting it. But currently, it's in another building that's right here. So it'll be brought inside. It's part of this cold storage area. So this is looking at the site, looking north. This is the proposed building site. Here's the existing building. The addition will go here. This building was built by volunteers it will be torn down and removed, won't be there. Currently, the garbage is located here. In another image, you'll see where they're going to relocate that to a different area. To the south of where the addition is the sheriff's shooting range. So this small building here is where the current herbicide is all stored. That will be that building will stay, but all the herbicide will go into the addition. That building will just become like an extra parts storage building there. There's the current building. So this door right here is the access to the bathroom for the site. This is the natural prairie area. There's 3 acres of natural prairie, which will accommodate for their 20% landscaping requirement for how much they're putting up. So this is looking from 210th Street. There's the tip of the building right there. So as far as it being site issues for neighboring, shouldn't be a problem. It's kind of an overview of the site that Joe put together for us. Here's the addition. This is kind of general parking. This is going to be an ADA space that's going to be added kind of on the north side there. This is where that dumpster that you saw in the first one is going to go to. Here's where their septic system is with the natural prairie area. I'm getting into the standards of approval compatibility. The proposed addition will match highest shade, everything about the existing one. Initially, the building was supposed to be 40 by 80, but when the building was built, budget cuts happened, so it was only 40 by 40. All setbacks are met, will not interfere with any development there, and the addition isn't identified to affect any of the nearby properties. As far as transition goes, the properties, the setbacks for this addition are far greater than what our requirements are, and the addition is buffered from 210th Street by the existing building, so you won't even see the addition. After construction, there's no additional anticipated traffic to the site. Currently, averaged is 5 trips to the site a day, and that kind of varies with the seasons and what they're working on. So parking and loading during construction, everything's going to be off of right-of-way. Nothing will be parked in the right-of-way. Once it's all completed, there'll be 4 parking spaces, one of which will be ADA marked on a concrete pad. There's no new proposed signage. There is signs on the property that meet the regulations due to the herbicide being on site and OSHA regulations. There will be another light added too, but it will meet our standards for the lighting that we were talking about earlier. As far as environmental protection, if the environmental impact to the site is anticipated to be limited, all those chemicals are now going to be stored inside of another building on spill-proof pallets is what they'll sit on inside of that locked area, so there's no real risk of there being spills there. It's outside of the floodplain. As far as the analysis goes for it, the board concludes that all the above development criteria will be met. It must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that if complete as proposed, there's a strong probability that development will act on one of those there, which we do not see that being the case. I can go through these questions that we asked of them. If you would like, all the questions we asked, they provided responses with. As far as public notice, those were mailed out to adjacent property owners within a quarter mile on November 21st. No one came in, no one called, emailed anything about it. Environmental health their only comment was to not drive in laterals, which is fine because the laterals are out in the prairie area, so shouldn't be a problem. Points to consider: the applicant addressed the need for the addition. The addition is not expected to affect any other properties. The addition will match the current existing building and is replacing a larger building. As far as our recommendation, planning development staff recommend approval based on applicant's submittal. In response to county staff questions on the conditional use permit application as put forth in CUP 10-19. As always, there are four options there for the planning and zoning to consider. Again, we recommend the first option. Does the commission have any questions?
Any questions for staff? All right.
Joe did a great job of making the submittal and provided a lot.
You did a great job presenting it
for us. Made our job easier.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Is there ask the applicant? Is there anything that you want to share or no?
I guess I would just sum up by saying that's the old county home site, and we had a 50-by-50 building, and it used to be the cattle barn for the county home, and that blew down in high winds in 2017 in June. So we've been, our equipment's been outside, and we're excited to build a little addition to move it in and protect.
To get your building back?
Yeah.
Right. Excellent. All right, now is the time for public comment. If there's any members of the public who would like to comment on this conditional use permit. Not seeing any. Commission discussion, is there any questions or comments or discussion that we need to have?
Seems pretty straightforward to me.
Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve option number one.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, so we have a motion by Moore and a second by McBride for approval, recommending approval of CUP 10-19 using the recommendation one, which is approval without any other conditions. Can we have a roll call vote?
Moore.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Moss.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
All right. Motion is approved. Enjoy your new garage.
What's that?
I said motion is recommended for approval.
Yes.
We got to go through one more.
You got to go through one more. Got to go to the Board of Adjustment. But
thanks, guys.
Yeah, enjoy your new garage was my.
Will do. Oh, my God.
All right. We're back to. Cross that one off so we don't try and do that one again. Approval of the meeting schedule. We already approved the meeting schedule with the election officers, so that one's done. Subdivision street signs, signage, work program item.
My item. Again, this item was before the Planning and Zoning Commission back in August. Previous intern, the current intern, spent a lot of time working through a lot of records on all the subdivisions that were approved in the county. And as I mentioned, Gabe and I did a field review of over 100 subdivisions. Which was really interesting, and when we first started out doing this, I thought we might get to maybe a quarter, but he was very efficient in the routes that we took, and so we were able to accomplish them all. So basically, the information that we found in our review on our records, and based on the field information, we came up with some concerns or some issues, and the information that's before you that I'll go through, it'll be on the screen. So I'm going to increase that maybe. would be in response to that. And this is a discussion item, so the idea is that we would like to receive feedback from you so that we can take this item to the county attorney's office for review and consideration before we come back to the Planning and Zoning Commission, because we have a resolution that we're proposing and ordinance amendments. So the issues, again, that we came across in our review was that there was inconsistent wording with the documentation of public acceptance, on the part of the county accepting roads. There was inconsistent language about whether or not the roads were dedicated for public use. Most of the resolutions that were drafted were made it very clear, but not always. We currently do not have a definition of what publicly dedicated street is, and so we're proposing that. The signs that are out there, there was a few that seemed to indicate that the roads were not open for public access. We encountered one subdivision that actually had gates, and we found out in talking to one of the property owners that it was mainly there for decoration, and they never really closed the gates. There are gated subdivisions out there. This was not intended to be that type of subdivision. So we're not seeing that that's an issue. This was not a part of it, but we did notice that there's a lot of streets that are narrow under the county's width requirements. We have a pretty good practice in place that involves our department and the county attorney's office in reviewing all subdivisions. And so, that's something that we look at on subdivision plats. There were also all different types of signs that were out there. Some were homemade. Somehow I think they were able to acquire signs that would be installed like in a public right-of-way scenario, like stop signs, yield type signs. But then, like I said, there were some that were made of wood, some were made of metal, so there was different materials that were being used.
You can order the same DOT signs on Amazon, so yeah.
Yeah, there's ways.
There's companies that manufacture and sell. Yeah.
I think there was a question about installing, having property owners install signs, but I know this is an issue that has come up in the past, and I think the county's position is it's totally acceptable for property owners, HOA boards to authorize or support the installation of traffic-related signs. And so in response to the work that we've done, we are proposing to put together a resolution that would address some of these items that I talked about. And what you have before you is the actual resolution. So this would be our template that staff would use for all subdivisions, whether it's a minor subdivision, which those are divisions involving lots of four or less, compared to a major plat, which are lots that are larger than four and have internal roads also. So this would be a template, and what's in red would be proposed language. And so I'll just read what language we are proposing. It says, whereas the owners of said real estate have consented to the said major, could be major or minor subdivision, and have dedicated for public use the street shown on said plat, and whereas the owners shall not restrict street access to the public, and whereas any sign installation located within the street right-of-way is encouraged to follow, it's called a manual on uniform traffic control devices for street and highways. But it's got this acronym,
MUTCD.
MUTCD.
That's good.
So this would be the resolution. This is the bottom part of it. Whereas the county engineer has reviewed and found in compliance with the street design standards, guidelines, or in cases where, because currently the engineer can waive a subdivision right-of-way width and a design width for the road. And so that would be the language that could occur in a resolution. Whereas the county engineer has reviewed and found in compliance to right-of-way and street width, and whereas the county engineer has approved that right-of-way pavement width for local residential streets may actually be reduced. And then it is further resolved that the dedication of streets contained in said plat herein should be accepted, provided, however, that the Story County, Iowa, shall not be responsible for any maintenance or repair of said streets, which is the current practice today. So that's the resolution. Any questions on that?
So is that template, that's what you would deliver to a subdivision and say, we would like you to use this and submit it, but input your...
Redraft those, actually.
Okay.
So this is what would be submitted with the drawing for the actual plat, and that's what the Board of Supervisors would review.
Okay.
But we could certainly make this available to the applicant.
This is the intention of this is the legal agreement between the county and the subdivision, even though it's private property, to say this is a road that's available for public use. Is that primarily for, like, emergency vehicles and things? Is that why you have that requirement?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, fire protection, law enforcement protection. Everyone receives, not everyone, it's not uncommon to receive visits from family, from friends, deliveries.
Gotcha. So that's, you know, just, I'm just trying to understand, from a legal perspective, that's what gives the UPS driver the right to drive onto their private road is because it's dedicated.
Otherwise, if it's private and it's not for public use, then what authority do they have to access
to be on the property? So it's not trespassing, right? Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So Jerry, this is a topic I have been very unclear on. If you remember, before I was on this board, you and Rick Sanders and I had a few issues about Squaw Road and Squaw Valley in general, because we replaced all of our own signs ourselves. And I guess I don't understand the basis of this. So right across the street from us, where Nissens live, you know, to the immediate west of Prairie Moon Winery, the road that goes back there, that is a private road.
Right.
So they maintain it. They own it. UPS drives up there all the time. So does the mailman. And I guess what I don't understand is, and this is 30 years ago, why would a subdivision like Squaw Valley have ever given this over to quote-unquote access to the public? Because if I understand it right, we now cannot put a gate up on it, because we have a huge problem, and we're not alone in the county.
Mm-hmm.
Google Maps has caused nothing but headaches, because they show that as a through path to get from Cameron School Road to Prairie Moon or anything, especially after closing the Squaw Creek Bridge a year and a half ago. Wasn't that it, roughly?
It's probably been
So I guess my question number one is, can we put a gate up, and why can't we? And if you're now saying that it looks like many of these public, making the street available to the public, aren't well documented, does that mean that a bunch of subdivisions, maybe including Squaw Valley, we never really gave this public designation of the road in an accepted form?
Yeah, talking about specific subdivisions, I'd have to pull those records. I don't have that document.
I'm speaking just in generalities.
But I would think that most of these larger ones had resolutions with that language that said that the road was publicly dedicated.
But
I doubt it would have been approved.
Well, Marvin asked, though, why do that? I mean, what is the clear black and white reason for that? That's the part I don't understand.
So that the emergency response personnel can use it. And so that everyone else can access it. You have friends, you have relatives.
But Jerry, by that explanation, then the fire department's not going to respond to Nissen's house. That's not going to happen. We all know that. I mean, it's not reality. UPS drives up there every day. Gilbert Fire Department doesn't have a big note that says, if you get a call from Nissen's, let their house burn to the ground.
Right.
So I guess maybe my answer to my question might be directed
to
HOA's attorney, because this has been a very big issue, and it's been getting bigger because of Google Maps.
I'm going to ask a question, and maybe this is the answer, but if you have not dedicated it to public use, and it is a joint road, right, between...
What do you mean joint, Marvin?
Well, it's in a subdivision, so it's you have the right to use it as well as your neighbors.
Okay, gotcha.
Right? Yep. So it's,
but maintained by the HOA or somebody.
Maintained by the HOA, but usage is permitted for whom? Right? Who is allowed to use that road? So if you have an argument with your neighbor and they have lots of family coming and visiting, could you say that those people are trespassing because they're not residents?
Well, and that's
right? It opens a legal can of worms where could you say, I don't want UPS driving past my house?
I think that the HOA could.
That then raises the question, right? I think that's where the question arises,
right,
of what is allowed and what is not allowed, and what's the authority for what is allowed. Whereas if you just designated it as a public road, the question of gates, I think, is different, though.
Right, and he's asking if he can put up a gate potentially in the subdivision to limit activity use. Because the scenario that you're talking about, you have an east-west road to the south and to the north of your subdivision, so motorists do use that as a route to get from point A to point B sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And prior to digital mapping, it wasn't a big deal. And Jerry, you saw our signs, you approved them, that say privately maintained road, local traffic only.
Yeah, and I commented on that the county does support property owners installing the signs, but we're trying to get to a point where if signs are planned, that they be more uniform in size and type.
So I guess maybe I don't want to take us down a rabbit hole, but if you have a sign that says this is, you know, for local use only, whether it's a private road or a public, designated as a public road, how is that enforceable?
Yeah, so you can say
that. Right.
But I think the specific sign that Doug's talking about, that specific sign was reviewed by the county engineer, by the county attorney's office, and it was deemed to be acceptable. But what we're talking about is future developments. We want there to be a situation in place where all subdivision roads, you know, even though they're owned and maintained privately, that they become dedicated for public use,
right,
and that there not be that question. So these resolutions, it's not real clear as to whether or not it's that they were publicly dedicated.
What are you looking for with this? This it just is listed as discussion.
This is a discussion item only, so input from each of you would be great. This is the resolution. We're proposing amendments to the land development regulations. We're proposing a definition be added for what a dedicated street is. Means a street right-of-way granted to Story County for public use as part of a subdivision. Consent and dedication, the granting of the dedication of the Board of Supervisors, acceptance of the dedication are acted on by the board by resolution. We've got proposed amendments for the provisions for minor and major subdivision plats. This is the segment under, again, this would be for minor subdivisions. Things that are required to be submitted, applicant is encouraged to submit a plan showing the identification and type and location of the traffic signs that are proposed, and that they be encouraged to follow this national standard or guideline. Similar language in major subdivisions. Currently, like I said, we have a program in place by which myself and Darren review preliminary subdivision plats. So this is the B major plats. When we get a request for a major subdivision plat, they have a year to complete all the improvements, or they can proceed and submit the major final plat if they provide the financial security and the development agreement. So there's an inspection that's involved, and that's what this talks about. This just puts that in writing so that there would be an inspection prior to moving on to the final plat stage. And then, again, we're still under major subdivisions. Applicant is encouraged to submit a plan showing, again, identification of type and location of traffic signs. Encouraged to follow the MUTCD guidelines. Here we're talking about the street specification standards. We're talking about private streets. Private streets are permitted provided that they serve four or fewer lots only in subdivisions of not less than four lots and shall be dedicated and accepted for public use. 87.08 is the detailed standards, talks about the right-of-way widths, the road widths, what the slopes of the edges of the design roadways are. And then there's some information at the bottom of that table. There's two lettered items. The first one is letter A. Again, this is existing language. It says, upon approval of the county engineer, the right-of-way width for local residential streets may be reduced in cases where the topography or special conditions make a right-of-way of less width more suitable. And again, that's the call of the county engineer based on the project that's before us. B talks about reduction of the actual widths, that the engineer has that right to waive that requirement. And then C is we're proposing to add, if A and or B are supported by the county engineer, the reduced right-of-way or pavement widths shall be part of a subdivision submittal and considered as conditions. So it would be something that the Board of Supervisors, well, the Planning and Zoning Commission would weigh in on it, action by the Board of Supervisors to make this a conditioned subdivision. And then the last thing is it's kind of a guidelines sheet that we would hand out to property owners, developers, individuals interested in the development process that really covers the things that we talked about.
Okay.
So again, this is a discussion item. We're just looking for input before we bring back something for action.
Okay.
For the commission.
No question.
Yes, sir.
Just for, and I don't know if I'm understanding this, but if you have a private drive owned by one or two or three, are they exempt from any of this?
That was a part of the review that we were looking at. We were to look at areas where that's just a driveway that serves multiple dwellings. Currently, our ordinance allows up to four dwellings to be served by the same access point and driveway. And we were to try to find out if those easements were had any dedication for public use. And we found a few examples of that, but nothing that indicated that they were publicly dedicated. In fact, the one that's attached here is off of Dayton. It's on the west side of Dayton. And this is actually a driveway. And these are various divisions that occurred over time. But what you see there in purple is actually an easement. It's not a right-of-way.
So it's a drive. Private?
It's private.
That's right.
Private driveway.
Is Dayton to the right? Dayton is to the right of that slide right there?
Yeah, Dayton would be...
That's like right by that stop sign.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Caddy corner from the trailer park.
Yep.
So that's just one of the examples. But we couldn't find any that actually dedicated for public use. And again, it would be a driveway.
Well, I wouldn't see any reason for a private driveway to have to come on under any...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're not proposing to do that.
So if it's four or less, then there's not a...
Unless there's four or less.
If there's more than four,
then you're saying they have to dedicate that.
And what you see, this is not a subdivision. These are just divisions that were allowed with, like, plat of surveys. Like a simple split once into two to create another lot for a house that met the county requirements, and this is over a long period of time.
Jerry, I would just say from my libertarian view of things like this, if I'm paying for it, I'm paying to maintain it, and I own it, I don't want anybody to tell me what I can do short of life safety issues. So the signs, I understand a set of guidelines only, but I think this is potentially a very slippery slope that can then become the next step to this. Let's not forget the Dakota pipeline, right? Eminent domain for a private company. We opened a slippery slope there that's never going to get closed, and I see something like this is along those lines.
Yeah, and again, we were just asked to look at these easement situations to see if those were publicly dedicated, and that's all we were to do.
And then make recommendations.
And we're not proposing to do anything with them.
No, I mean in this entire thing about signage and road width and all those things.
Well, putting up that gate is a life safety issue.
We can.
If it's locked,
it's not going to be locked. It wouldn't be a lock. That's immaterial. But if we get to that point, we are all going to be in a courtroom somewhere about this, and I hope we don't get to that point. But you can imagine the issue that my little subdivision has and others have is that we have now heavy traffic driving up and down and wearing out our road at a much higher rate than ever happened in the past. And unfortunately, it appears there's no way to fix that from happening. People see that because it's a publicly deeded roadway, it appears as a through street, and we're getting a lot of heavy traffic, and the road is wearing out faster. If the county was paying for it to fix it, couldn't care less. Not my problem. We're paying, and that's where I have a big issue with this, and I think that the more regulations we put on things like that, the worse.
So Doug, are you saying the county told you could not gate those roads?
Correct.
In that, I would have to look at our records, but I'm thinking that that subdivision, the resolution that approved that subdivision indicated that the roads would be publicly dedicated for public use.
And to complicate things,
so
Jerry,
it has to be open to the public.
We have two HOAs. We have the north side and the south side, and where the gate would have to go because the geography is right in the middle. And again, so now we have two groups that are both. I can't think of a polite way to say it, but we're kind of getting hosed here by all this traffic. And the road is, we can see it, you know. So, yeah, the answer was we can't put a gate up on it. So what we've been able to do so far is put these signs up, and those aren't working at all. And short of suing Google to say you have to take this off as a through road, and their argument backwards to us is, well, it's a public road. And I hate to say Google's right, but as it stands right now, well, and Jerry's probably going to regret that this can of worms got open, because if it turns out that we didn't clearly designate the road public, we may have a whole different discussion in front of us.
Well, like I said, I'd have to check the records, but it's a sizable subdivision, and I would be surprised if the roads weren't publicly dedicated for public use. Mm-hmm.
Back to my original comment, any overreach on something I pay for, I am against by in principle.
Yeah. Other comments?
Any questions for staff?
Kind of the gate thing is a secondary issue, though, right? That doesn't really go into this?
Yeah, it was an observation that we saw. It was the only subdivision that Doug mentioned. West of the winery and the brewery, and we were told that it was more for cosmetic purposes, and they haven't shut it, but they actually have a resolution that indicates that the roads are supposed to be open for public use. So it was just an observation, and we were just following up on it.
Okay. Have you gotten any in this base? You were looking for discussion. You've gotten discussion.
Right.
Thanks, Doug.
Right. Thank you.
You'll never say I'm shy.
No, I appreciate it.
But have you gotten what you want, or do you need anything from us further for?
Right. I mean, ultimately, we would like to come back to the Planning and Zoning Commission with, you know, what we've prepared is a resolution right. Template that we would like to use for future subdivisions, and then these amendments.
So I guess my input as part of the discussion is this open discussion question that we have about what is the implication of designating a private property road as a public access road, and then what does that mean in a situation like there's where you now have increased traffic, right? Because theoretically that means construction's happening out there, and you have big, large truck traffic going through privately maintained residential area where roads are maybe not, they might follow those standards, but those standards for a residential with now heavy truck traffic, you know, where the benefit is to the construction company and the public, but the cost burden is on the, you know, the HOA, on the private ownership of the road. So I think this does get into a question of, if it's designated as a public road and used as a public road, then why is it not publicly maintained?
What Marvin said.
Right. But I think that's an open question that, you know, is still going to be an open question when you bring this back to us. So maybe there's more discussion that can be had there.
Regardless of what you're proposing, I mean, what power in such a situation could they have someone arrested for being on private land if they have it posted without this? Is this going to improve the situation, or is this going to make the situation worse? In this situation, could the truck still go and not have any repercussions? I mean, they are, if it's already posted private and they're still going. I mean, can you put up a cement wall?
It's a private road. You could theoretically put up, you know, the no trucks over whatever, no right. vehicles over.
There's no enforcement power you have.
There's no enforcement power.
Yeah, because one of our neighbors, the county doesn't enforce it, right?
No. And one of our neighbors brought up a good point. He said, in the past, before we had digital mapping, if somebody would take all the effort to find that little shortcut, it wasn't that big of a deal, because it was only one truck a month that would make that, you know, that would say, hey, I can make this happen. And now, with not only digital directions but also overview maps, you can say with a 56-foot detached semi, a truck driver can not only get the directions but can look at it visually in the bird's eye view and go, oh yeah, I can make it through there, no problem. And that's what we're getting. And it's not construction traffic in our subdivision or delivery traffic. It's people that are taking the shortcut. And the other direction for us is when Squaw Creek Bridge closed, now everybody from Cameron Estates that works down, they're basically using us as a shortcut now. And we knew this was somewhat of a possibility, but the delivery traffic is the real problem. And the only way to address it is to put up a physical barrier that the residents have a magical card, an RFID tag in our windshield, that the gate then opens. Right. And eventually people will figure out, hey, there's a gate there.
Or an irrational number of speed bumps.
We got three. That's like five more. They're like a bigger.
That you make it so uncomfortable, and that it's faster to go around, and more comfortable to go around than to go through.
Right.
Which is then a burden that you guys have to pay for and live with.
Right.
So
I get it.
You said there's two different HOAs there.
Yeah.
Two different subdivisions.
Yep.
So then, why would you even need an RF? Tag at all if you
want
to throw a wall there to stop.
Not a wall, no, a gate.
No, he's saying that with is you.
We want to be able to access
your HOA,
it.
You're paying your HOA to either the south or the north side, right?
Luke, we have a great relationship between the two HOAs,
right.
So it's not an issue of us versus them at all. It's the whole north-south road is the problem, and it's people that don't live in the subdivision. So if we had a radio-controlled gate right at the middle, we wouldn't have that through traffic at all. It's not an easy answer. Nobody right. wants to be the bad guy.
So you would that were installed, need to put a gate on both ends and make the entire road private.
Put it right in the middle.
It would be a gateway in the middle that makes it effectively not a through road.
Bingo.
Okay.
Yeah, the signs that were installed, though, were reviewed and deemed to be appropriate to be installed.
I remember we went through the whole process, Jerry. Like, the problem is that it just doesn't matter. People look at them. I bet 1 out of 1,000 people go, oh, I'm not going to drive up here.
Oh, that's nice. I'm going
in. A bazooka is also an option, but I believe illegal.
In this kind of a situation, I mean, if you plant a lawn to separate the two instead of a gate, so mm-hmm. clearly there is no road, but everybody on the inn knew that everybody just kind of runs up over it, but outside traffic would not do that. Would there be any legal problem with doing that?
Well, I think because we've made it a public road.
I think our position would be that you can't do anything that's going to restrict the access or
between
usability.
Two subdivisions?
Well, I think he's primarily talking about the very north end and the very south end. Because
oh, so
the
two
road
gates.
Is
not
acting
to separate
as
the
a
two
through
and
street, like a collector road, for people to get through to whatever they're going to on the north side and to get to the south side of the two subdivisions.
So you kind of can't have it both ways. You can't have the convenience of having it between the two without having other traffic that takes it. I mean, how would you even tell if it was someone?
Well, that's why the gate is the only answer. A gate that has a means for residents to open it and nobody else. Because
but
then,
you would have to have a gate
no, you, you put
both
it right,
ends.
No, you put it in the middle. So, yeah, maybe you'd have a delivery. Somebody, UPS delivering to the south side, fine. We'd give the UPS guy an RFID card, right? That makes sense. But my view is we're paying to maintain it. We should be able to do, within limits, whatever we want on it to control the traffic.
I'd go ahead and do it, though.
But in
Jerry,
theory,
I'm with you, buddy.
Just do it. What's the county going to do? So, yeah, let them come on.
Can they change the road?
Yeah,
I mean, can they make it into two roads? Where there's just an understanding that you go through somebody's lawn to get over it?
There would probably be a submittal process, I would imagine. Are you talking about like making it two lanes instead of one lane?
No, making a physical buffer between the north side and the south side, right at what we call, right at the hump.
Okay.
And yeah, making it a curb that everybody really drives over, but trucks look and say, I can't drive over.
I'm not going to design this, but you could essentially make it a cul-de-sac on both ends.
Yes.
And with a, like a golf course walkway.
Just like the Ames Middle School. If you drive down there where you can go in the two ends and there's a curb cut so you can actually drive over the thing.
Right.
That would be something like that.
It's designed as a cul-de-sac, but it's still drivable, but
right.
not
but
as a through road.
Right.
This
the legality
doesn't
of this question.
Really involve gates, right? Does
no.
This, so has anything that is in here restricted this?
You lost me.
Have any of the restrictions of this
with their proposed amendments?
With the resolution and the ordinance amendments?
Jerry, I think in the bit.
This actually make any difference in this
would be
situation?
For future subdivisions, not existing.
If it's just an advisory thing, again, my personal belief is that I'm against it. But if it's future subdivisions, Jerry, if you're asking for feedback, what I would suggest is this could be a very big deal to a whole bunch of people and a whole bunch of development in the county. I would get a committee together and get a representative, get Friedrichs, get somebody from Hunzikers, get all the big developers and sit down and take all the input. You know, does anybody see problems beyond what I see with this? And then bring it back to us and then make a resolution.
Okay.
I think that my fundamental question is the what problem are we trying to solve by designating roads as a public right-of-way? Right? What problem does that solve? So we have a private road. Let's use this as an example, and maybe it's just an anecdotal example, but it is an example. If you have a private road that's privately maintained, that then gets Google mapped, but you've designated it as a public road, and you've now you now pay for it, but you can't control it. So what does designating it as a public road, because I would be inclined to say if I'm building a new subdivision and I'm paying to maintain the road, I don't want to designate it as a public road, right?
Yeah, I think I kind of look at it maybe in the reverse, because I think we do have some subdivisions in the county that are they're private roads and they're not publicly dedicated. So you can get that question on the other end too about, you know, how that impacts those that might be restricted from
dedicating it as what does dedicating a private road as a public access, what is the benefit to doing that for the county and for the individuals that maintain it?
Assuring that people that live there can have their friends come, that they can receive deliveries, that there'll be no question about receiving response.
I think this, so not, let me go backwards. When you and I did the sign thing, I asked this exact question that Marvin asked in almost exactly the same way to Ethan, and I never got an answer. This, I don't really think this is a zone.
I responded, but that's my response.
Yeah, Jerry, but you're not the county attorney. That's my point, is I want to know from a legal standpoint what, and I think that's where Marvin's going too.
And none of this stuff has gone before the county attorney, so we're just in a discussion mode here.
Okay.
And everything will go to the county attorney's office for review.
I'm not saying I'm against this. I am, based on our discussion, I am for the concept of making sure that the people that live there, their individual usage rights are protected by designating it as a public road.
You could
right?
get into a scenario
where
a neighbor says, you know what, you have too many people coming to your house. They have a home business. You have way too much traffic. If it's primarily...
I understand by designating it as a public right-of-way that you're protecting the individual rights, right, of each individual homeowner that can't get ganged up on by an HOA. Right, because that does happen. I totally get that, but what I'm not clear on is the once you've designated it as a public right of way, and you do have issues and situations, you now don't have a remedy for that, right? And that puts us into kind of a legal quagmire, and I just want to make sure that...
To be honest with you, with the issue that Doug's talking about, I was aware of the signage issue. I was not aware of this ongoing nature. So, I mean, that's news to me. And the signage was installed, you know, several months ago.
I'd like to find out what does the Iowa Code say and about this public designation. I know what your opinion is, but I want to hear it from Ethan, because he's where the buck stops in the legal side. And it's not just for my little problem or ours in Squaw Valley. I think it's a pertinent question that this is something for the county attorney.
Well, this will prompt.
It's not really so much with this, or maybe take that as feedback of, hey, Ethan, or I don't care who does it. There's got to be something in the Iowa Code that explains this. And I don't want to put you on the spot because you're not an attorney.
No,
I don't want you to have
I'm
to be.
I'm a planner.
Stuck. Yeah.
Right.
And I understand where you're coming from, but I go back. When Rick Sanders asked me to be on this board, he said, one thing matters. What does the Iowa Code say? And everything else kind of should fall into place.
Right. And they will look at the Iowa Code. They'll look at federal acts. They'll look at the state codes. They'll probably visit court cases. They'll look at other county ordinances.
Okay.
But that'll be a part of our process.
Okay.
And this might take a while. This is a big issue.
There's a lot of gray area in designating public use for private property. And that's what it comes down to, right? So, all right.
Appreciate your input.
Any other input for Joe? No? All right. Now's the we're now to section 12, staff comments.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you, the Board of Supervisors adopted a policy to change the hours for the public administration building effective January 1.
8 to 4:30.
2020, yeah, 8 to 4:30. Currently it's 8 to 5. And so January 1, we'll be closing at 4:30.
So
the other thing is,
so that means we'll have half hour meetings. Right?
What's that? Sorry, Jerry, you got to stay until we go through all our agenda.
No, I didn't know. We got that meeting earlier.
Jerry, is that all departments? So
the entire building.
Will this impact people from the public that want to come in half an hour late?
Yeah, the hours are going to be 8 to 4:30.
So you
can access
get out,
any department.
But after 4:30, they can't get into this meeting.
Right.
No, they can still get into the meetings.
You can't?
Oh, yeah, sorry, because we opened the door.
I have to put in a work order to the facilities management to leave the door unlocked on our meeting
nights. Right. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Stephanie.
Didn't let somebody pound.
Because that's life safety, right, Stephanie?
That's right.
They got to be able to get in the door, just like my gate.
Just got to be able to get through.
But the emergency people can get in because they have locks.
Okay.
So glad.
All right.
We're working on budget too. Our budgets are due Monday, and so Iowa State Extension puts on some really good training for new Board of Adjustment, new Planning and Zoning Commission members. We've been looking and haven't seen anything for the next calendar year, but I plan on putting in some monies for Planning and Zoning Commission members and Board of Adjustment members. Could I have a show of hands of those that might be interested in training? I've attended it. Worthwhile.
I've been through it too, and it's good because you don't know what you don't know. So when you sit through it, it's
be nice for a refresher.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a couple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
We're going to have a new commission member as well.
Right.
So.
The first of the year.
When did you say that training?
It's usually offered in the
late spring,
winter, early spring. And there's usually a place, they usually have Des Moines, and then there's a couple of sites within probably 50 miles of Ames that they offer also.
And what kind of hours did you say?
It's like a 3-hour workshop.
On weekdays?
In the evening.
In the evening.
Okay. Yeah, it's an evening thing.
Yeah.
That might be
it's worthwhile.
But when we get the information on the dates, we'll get that out to everybody. That's all that I have. Thank you for your input.
Is there any commission discussion?
Jerry, what's the process for filling Jerry's seat if we have somebody that's expressed interest, will it be posted on the county site?
The Board of Supervisors took action at the last Board of Supervisors meeting to fill that position.
Was it posted?
Well, they review, yeah. There's like a 90-day posting requirement.
Okay.
And they interview and they actually
select it.
I don't have that name. Stephanie, do you have that information?
I believe it's Gina McAndrews.
Gina McAndrews?
Okay.
I'll go check.
She'll be starting the meeting in January.
It was on yesterday's Board of Supervisors agenda.
So this was the same gentleman that applied last time and didn't get it. Do you remember that topic? And so where was it posted? Because he didn't see that Jerry's seat was posted somewhere.
It's been posted, like Jerry said, for 90 days.
Okay, but where?
That
was my question.
Yeah.
If you would say, can you give me a link so I can say, hey, you dropped the ball? You know, where it would have been on the...
It's probably taken down.
Start with Story County and keep moving through the links.
Was it published in the paper? Seems like...
I don't know that it was published, but it was posted on our website.
Posted on the website.
No worries.
But you'd like to know where it was at.
Yeah.
We can get that to you.
Yep.
I'm guessing probably as a new splash, but I'd have to look to find out.
Okay.
And that's where they put all of the commissions and boards that they're looking for people for.
All right. Any other business? I want to say thank you to Jerry.
Thank you.
Greatly appreciated your input and your views on your input to the commission. I think we've benefited, and I think Story County has benefited.
Thank you from staff also. We appreciate your input.
Great work from Jerry. We may still get lunch, but
what's that?
We might get lunch then.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I move we adjourn.
Second.
All right. You stand adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.